Welcome back to House of Bravo, where we break down Bravo shows and personalities from a cosmic perspective. I'm Emma, an astrocartographer and human design reader. Each week, we'll uncover the underlying energies shaping the drama both on screen and off, from current astro weather and events to deep dives into Bravo Liberty's energetics. This is your one-stop shop podcast to get your Bravo fix while learning to decode the language of the stars.
Hi, friends. I feel like I just need to take a breath. This Mercury retrograde has my brain obliterated. It's like as if it does not exist in my body. I feel like I'm having tech issues today. The sound is a little off and I can't figure out why, so apologies. I'm sitting in a dark room because my light blew, and when I put in a new bulb, it's making a buzzing noise that's driving me crazy. But there is so much to talk about, and I'm so excited to get into it all. So we're just going to power through. We are done with the eclipses for now, but we have a huge event coming up, which actually I think it kind of already started. Uranus, kind of, I think it's already started. Uranus and Jupiter are conjunct in, oh my god, my brain, Taurus, hello. And this is natural disasters at their finest. We had a little mini earthquake over on the East Coast. Taiwan also had some smaller earthquakes, which, I mean, it's not unusual for them. Taiwan gets earthquakes. The East Coast doesn't generally. We also have crazy, crazy flooding happening in the UAE, the United Arab Emirates, and Oman. To be honest, I'm surprised we haven't been hearing about more natural disasters. Taurus represents nature, Jupiter expansion, Uranus shock disruption. I'm really surprised we haven't had like volcano activity, even tsunamis potentially, but there's still time. Also, though, just like usually leading up to an aspect, so a conjunction, an opposition, a square, a trine, a sextile, a semi-sextile, a quinquex. Wow, I can never pronounce that one. Anyway, like leading up to or when an aspect is applying is generally a stronger energy than it hits the climax or the apex of that energy when the aspect is exact. And then from there, the energies start to separate, they start to dissipate. They're still present, but they're not as strong. So honestly, if big things don't happen by Saturday, when this is like really exact at 21 degrees, 49 seconds, I think we're kind of, for the most part, in the clear. So let's see. But going back to the last thing we've been talking about, the eclipses on the Aries-Libra cycle. There's so much I want to say about this, but there's only so much time and we've got so many things to talk to. But we've got some big things. I mean, OJ died. We've got a lot of Bravo news. Kenya Moore is coming back to Housewives of Atlanta. Really, like, the big thing in the Bravo universe was April 15th. I feel like it's a day that will go down in Bravo history. Let's talk about what was going on in the sky on April 15th. First of all, as we know, we've got the North Node in Aries and the South Node in Libra. This is why we've been having these eclipses in those two signs. And in addition to that, we've got Chiron, Mercury, and Venus in Aries. So these three entities were opposing the South Node in Libra. And Libra represents the scales. It represents justice. It represents weighing out the options, kind of balancing things, you know, scales. And then Aries is about assertiveness, about impulsiveness, about taking action, really above all else. So to me, this is like the network taking swift and assertive action to kind of balance things out, right what they see as being wrong within their universe at the moment. That sun in Aries is also squaring Pluto in Aquarius. Aquarius representing the community, the collective, Pluto representing an ending, a death, a rebirth of sorts. The sun, of course, is ego identity. And that sun is also squaring the moon, which was in Cancer that day, Cancer representing family. And it's kind of, to me, especially because, you know, when, well, that's going to be difficult to explain without a chart. Those two entities that are squaring the sun, Pluto and the moon, are in opposition to each other. And we see that the identity of the Bravo family is literally changing. Right? It's like the death of this kind of the Bravo as we know it. Now, this is sounding really dramatic, and they didn't get rid of that many like huge players. It's not like we had, you know, Alexia had a divorce. It's not like Alexia was laid off. The people who were Crystal, it's not that she's so big in the family, but really more so than anything else, to me, this is kind of like the changing of the guard. I feel like for a while, the housewives have been on a bit of a decline. It's not what it used to be, the housewives as kind of a whole. Those of us who have been fans for years and years and years keep saying that it's not as good as it used to be for various reasons. I mean, I won't get into the specifics, but in a lot of ways, the housewives aren't really the top of the Bravo food chain anymore. The youngins are coming from their for their spot. And I feel like that really speaks to this Pluto in Aquarius squaring the sun, and that moon in Cancer also squaring the sun on this day. Uranus and Jupiter, which are conjunct in Taurus, were sextiling Saturn and Mars in Pisces. And to me, this is just another visual representation, or visual for me, because I'm looking at the chart, but it's just another representation of a restructuring and a severing of ties. Mars being about cutting things off, Saturn about being an authority, laying down the law, disciplining, setting boundaries, things like that. So a lot was going on the 15th. And I mean, so many things happened. Preston was engaged. We mentioned that Kenya's coming back. I can't talk about all of them, but the two I want to focus on are Candace's baby announcement and Alexia's divorce. So I'm pretty sure I talked about this before when she had announced her leaving the show, but Candace is going through her Mars return, which is happening in her fifth house. The fifth house, as we know, represents creation of anything, but oftentimes it's associated with babies. So it's kind of like with her Mars return in her fifth house in Pisces, it's like a reassessment and a commitment to where your energies are going for the next 2-year cycle, specifically because Mars, you have a Mars return approximately every 2 years. Now, in Pisces, a sign of creativity, yes, this can speak to her taking time and committing herself to her art, her singing, her performing career, but we see more literally here that it's actually the creation of a child. Saturn in Pisces, that's transiting right now, is also hitting her natal Mars-Jupiter conjunction. Saturn, the taskmaster, the disciplinarian. And it's kind of like she's buckling down and getting serious about this thing that she's been wanting to create, a baby. We've heard her kind of go back and forth over the past few years. Is this something that she wants? Is she ready to commit to it? Now, those eclipses that we were talking about in Aries Libra are hitting her 6th and 12th houses. Your 6th house being about your day-to-day routine, your health, your rituals, the 12th house about being your subconscious, things that are hidden from you. And I see these eclipses hitting those houses. It's like, yes, like when you have a baby, everything in your day-to-day life changes. You have to rethink what your priorities are, the boundaries between yourself and your selfishness and others, and committing to taking care of a child is a ton of responsibility. It changes your whole life. I think she wasn't ready for that in the past. Also, with Libra in her 12th house, with the South Node there, it's kind of like a healing and a release around being on the fence about this commitment. So that's what I'm seeing with Candace. When we look at Alexia's divorce, I don't know her rising sign. I'm not sure where the transits are hitting her exactly, but that Jupiter and Uranus conjunction in Taurus is opposing her Neptune in Scorpio. To me, that's kind of like the ending to the fairy tale. It's also taking the veil off of what has been hidden. But kind of what was more interesting to me than Alexia getting divorced, because I mean, I think the writing was on the wall with that one. I didn't need Alexia to call that out. That just kind of seemed doomed from the beginning for me. And maybe that was just a vibe more so than anything else in my intuition, but that just did not seem like it was a forever relationship. So what was more interesting to me was Adriana having called this out during the season. And something about Adriana's energy makes me at least skeptical of the information she's delivering. I think a lot of people feel that way. Her delivery makes it seem vindictive and catty and not trustworthy. Whereas, like, let's say Garrity had said the same thing, it would have maybe held more weight at the time. And I put up a question box in the stories on the Instagram account. Like, what stood out to you guys the most? And a lot of you said her Capricorn placements. So yeah, she has Venus, Mars, and the moon in Capricorn. These placements are going to want to be like, get real and be down to earth and set the record straight. Her Mars is also trining her Pluto-Uranus conjunction in Virgo, which is also squaring her Mercury in Sagittarius. This is definitely a call you out on your bullshit kind of energy. She also has Saturn and Chiron in Pisces, which are being pulled into the equation because they're squaring her Mercury, opposing that Pluto and that Uranus. And to me, this is just saying, like, she wants to tear down the illusion that Alexia is happily married. Part of it's from her own pain and hurt and her history, but also just on principle with Sagittarius, Virgo, and Capricorn energy at play. But to me, what stands out the most was the energy mix of Gemini and Sagittarius that's happening. She's got her North Node and Jupiter in Gemini. And on a low vibe, this can be a very gossipy nature, a very like, and gossip can be just for the fun and the sake of gossip. It could also be to be hurtful. We're like looking at the low vibe of that energy. And she also has her Sun and Mercury in Sagittarius. Now, I've talked before about the Gemini-Sagittarius opposition. It's like this push and pull between facts and knowledge, and a dissection of what is the truth and facts versus truth and perspective comes into play as well with Sagittarius. And I feel like in a high vibe, Gemini wants people to own their truth. In the low vibe, it maybe wants to watch them suffer when they don't own their truth. Adriana also has her Neptune in Scorpio sextiling that Venus in Capricorn. So her values, her ideas of love are a bit clouded and could definitely also double down on that vindictive energy in the low vibe of Scorpio. So it's just like a little, my little two cents about Adriana. I don't know. Like, did they already film the next season of Miami? Are we going to watch this play out? One more thing about this Jupiter-Uranus conjunction that's taking place right now is if you were born in the year 1991 or 1992, your natal Pluto is opposing this conjunction. So the universe is going to be asking you to start doing things a little differently than you have been. And you're going to want to take a look at what houses that's happening in for you. What house does 21 degrees Scorpio and Taurus fall in? Those are the areas of life where you're going to want to look at how can you do things differently than you've been doing them. And while it will most strongly affect 1991, 1992 babies, really anyone who has Pluto and Scorpio, by sign, it will be having this square. So take a look at where, again, 21 degrees Scorpio and Taurus are falling in your chart. All right, but let's get into the shows this week. So I want to start with Summer House because we're talking about relationships coming to an end with Alexia and Todd. You know, we came into this season of Summer House all expecting it to be so much about Lindsay and Carl and their dynamic. And it, you know, we've definitely seen that. But I feel like even more so, it seems to be highlighting these relationship issues between Amanda and Kyle. And I'm kind of confused about the Amanda and Kyle situation because he keeps saying he wants to work on their communication and she seems to keep just shutting him down. So I don't know if this is another case of showing up differently on camera than what's going on in your actual day-to-day life. And to me, it seems like Amanda just wants him to get on her page because all I know is what I'm seeing here, right? So that's what I'm talking to. And really, what's like stood out to me the past few weeks is that they don't really seem well paired to each other in a lot of ways. She's mentioned that she thought he would grow out of his party phase, but looking at his chart, like that is Kyle. Kyle is a partier. He's a man of the people. He wants to be out and about. And while progressions may dampen that energy a bit, that is who he is at his core. This is a guy who cares about partying. He cares about socialization. It's going to be a big part of his life with Libra and his Libra placements falling in the sixth house, his day-to-day habits, Libra being a very social sign. And even though he doesn't have any planets in Gemini, his second house is still falling in Gemini. And so it's going to have like what he values, what he cares about is going to have very Gemini flair to it. So again, being social, being able to connect with people, you add his Aquarius moon into the mix in his 10th house. It's just like, again, like being part of the community, being a social creature, being able to connect with people on an intellectual level is very important for him. So when he's saying that he feels like he's not connecting with Amanda, they're not communicating the same way, like that is going to be very frustrating for him. I've done their synastry before and like who wants to keep harping on the same thing? But what like kind of pinged in my head when I thought of like, wow, they really just don't seem compatible for each other. And you can like appear compatible energetically and just not be, right? Because it depends how that energy is really playing out. What expression of that energy are you going to be? which actually is an idea for a bonus episode I really want to do. And I'm just trying to find the right person to do it with me. But I want to talk about, like, within the Bravoverse, the different ways that energy can represent, because there's such stereotypes of what each energy is. And of course, like with archetypal systems, there's going to be stereotyping. We're putting people in boxes as a way to understand them. But I want to kind of stretch beyond that. So anyway, that's just something I have working on the back burner, because they just seem so incompatible to me. I wanted to run their Vedic compatibility charts or calculations, I should say. So I should preface with, I am not a Vedic astrologer. I don't really understand Vedic astrology, but I have dated Indian men seriously, and their mothers inevitably run our compatibility charts through these systems. And it literally is like a points system based on your birth charts. And there's a score of, like, the highest score you can get is 36. So if you get 36 out of 36, that's 100% compatibility. I'm sure that exists. I've never seen it. I have not been compatible with any of my exes, which is why they're my exes. So I don't know Amanda and Kyle's exact time of births, but I know their rising signs. So I used that to run their charts, like their approximate times. And out of 36 points, Kyle and Amanda got 15, which means they have compatibility of 41%. Now, anything other a score of 20 is considered incompatible. Sever that tie, move on to the next relationship. And this doesn't mean that they're doomed, but it definitely means it's not going to be an easy journey for them. And points that are calculated are broken down into different categories. The ones that they scored the highest compatibility in were, number one, this category that kind of represents, from my understanding, of biological physical attraction and the ability to produce offspring. This they scored an 8 out of 8. So while they may not be happy with each other, they might become happier once children are brought into the mix. And they have an undeniable biological attraction to each other. They also scored a 3 out of 5 in the friendship category, which, as we all know, like, it's so important to be friends with your partner. They scored a 2 out of 4 in sexual chemistry. I'm not going to go through each category that there is, but basically, in terms of, like, their temperament, their social desires, they're scoring 0 points out of a possible 6 and 7 points. So it is interesting to see that this is kind of where we're seeing their biggest problems falling. And basically all this to say that if they had gone to see a Vedic astrologer, none of them would have approved this marriage. But again, that doesn't mean it can't work. I was thinking about whether they would get divorced, and I just feel, not that it can't happen, but I just feel like Amanda doesn't have the energy to divorce him. Or I should say, she wouldn't divorce him because of the amount of energy it would take. And also the fact that it would set her back to square one. And she's clearly ready for the next stage in life. Side note, I think it's really funny that during their marriage counseling or relationship coaching, whatever that was, Kyle's sitting there wearing a shirt that says "Live Free or Die." Like, it's like he's trying to send a message, like, help, save me, SOS. Because, like, he doesn't feel like he's able to just be himself with Amanda right now. Everything that he's doing, that he has been doing, going out, partying, all these things, she's getting so upset about and expecting that he will have changed those behaviors because he's a 40-some-odd-year-old man, and why haven't you calmed down, this, this, and that. But again, like, that is just who Kyle is. onto a lighter house couple. We've got West and Sierra. And I may have to take back my words about this just being a fun fling, because it seems that they actually may still be together. I was watching Watch What Happens Live, and Andy mentioned that he wasn't going to ask West to talk about the status of their relationship because he wants the viewers to watch it play out. That, of course, makes me even more curious, because Andy always asks people to talk about these things. Like, rarely does he say, just watch it play out. Like, sometimes he'll say, wait till the reunion. But I think we still have like a good amount of this season to get through. So, ooh, excuse me, got the hiccups. So yeah, now I'm really intrigued. I don't know. Ooh, still have the hiccups. I don't know West's rising sign, or I would have run their compatibility for fun as well. Hopefully we can get to the bottom of this and we can see how compatible Sierra and West are from a Vedic perspective. I've also, like, I've been meaning to take a course on Vedic astrology because I do find it really fascinating. And I think that in terms of predictions, it is kind of more spot on or very specific. I don't know. I am, like, it's funny because whenever I go see an astrologer, I end up seeing a Vedic astrologer. I think, one, because of the partners I've had in the past. Also, the first astrology reading I ever had in my adult life was from he called himself a shaman. I would not call him that. But that my mom had been working with, and he did Vedic astrology. And maybe now, because I know Western astrology, it's like, okay, if I want something that's different than what I can see myself. Although, if you know astrology, looking at your chart, your own chart, is not that easy, I have to say. It's like you're so blinded by what you know about yourself that sometimes it's hard to see outside of that. Just like in any aspect of us trying to look at ourselves from an outside perspective, like sometimes it's good to get an outsider's view. But okay, anyway, I digress. Yes, one day, hopefully in the not too far future, I will be able to pull more Vedic astrology into this podcast. But the last thing I want to say about Summerhouse Hamptons is the amount of love that West gets is, well, sweet. But can you imagine being Jesse? Same situation. He's coming on. They're new to the season. And West is getting all the love. Hardly anyone is mentioning Jesse in any capacity at all, except for the fact that he had been hitting on Paige. Like, that's the only context we really hear about him in, or the fact that he has survived testicular cancer. Yeah, but I feel like it must be really, like, Jesse came on so strong and cocky, and I'm hoping that he will be humbled by all this attention that nice, sweet Midwestern West is getting, who came in, like, ready to fit in, not trying to stand out, is kind of how I see it. Yeah, that Capricorn energy that West and Sierra share, that may just be like a stronger bond than what I had originally been pinpointing it as. All right, over to Summerhouse Martha's Vineyard. I just, like, the only thing that's really sticking out to me about this episode was there was a lot of healing seemingly taking place, right? Like, hurt being brought to the center stage and hopefully healing taking place. I don't have a lot of this crew's natal charts, but I have the sun, moon, and risings that Stars X Alyssa has compiled. And as we've talked about in previous episodes, the fixed energy in this cast is abundant. And it was all getting hit by the Venus retrograde in Leo that took place last summer. So yeah, Venus is about love and beauty, but it also is very much about our values. Leo, being ruled by the sun, is going to represent our egos And so we have Jordan processing her flare-up of alopecia, what it means to her as a Black woman who, as she has said, our hair is our currency. And she's wondering what her value and worth is without it. Such a Leo thing, like, who am I? I should say, that's such a Venus Leo thing, you know, like, being attached to this idea of what beauty is, and having that be so very much about your looks. So we see Jordan going through processing that. Jasmine is kind of processing her place in the pride, in the group. She started last year as the leader. She's got a sun in Capricorn. It's very leader energy. But as we see, she's clearly not being seen as the leader anymore. And I think she feels like even though she brought everyone together, she's now kind of on the outside looking in a lot of ways. Her friendships aren't what they were before this whole journey took place. This journey being Summer House, Martha's Vineyard, season one. Then we have Nick being confronted with how he treats women. We've got Summer's ego being bruised from being rejected by Alex. We've got Noelle also questioning her place as a newbie, feeling exposed for having shown her cards to Alex and being rejected. So a lot of processing is taking place that will hopefully lead to healing. Hopefully lead to healing. Retrogrades, again, being a time of revisiting, rethinking, reassessing. So here it's like reassessing all these different areas for them, their ego, their visions of beauty, what they value, how they are being valued by others. Now, where we didn't see much healing at all was over on the Real Housewives of Potomac finale. I have finally wrapped up this season of Potomac. And I think I said this a few weeks ago when I talked about the reunion part one, but it really feels like Andy was giving these women and even like stating, okay, like you guys have the opportunity to take accountability, to move forward with each other, and kind of like unsaid, but if you don't do this, there will be consequences. And now we see the consequences are Robin is not asked back. NECA may not be asked back. Like that did come out also on the 15th, but it hasn't really been confirmed or, you know, on Watch What Happens Live on the 16th, when Andy was recapping all the news that came out on the 15th, he did not mention NECA in that. So there is a possibility that she will still return. And then, of course, from what we know, Candace has decided to step down, but was she fired also? I feel like the network really gives the women the opportunity to decide how they want to announce and package leaving the show, which is why so many people commended Crystal for, oh my God, I didn't even mention Crystal at the top of the show. It's another one who's not coming back. I'm actually very sad about that. Side note, very sad about that. I feel like Crystal was finally coming into her own on the show. I really wanted to see more of her. I like her dynamic with the ladies. I think she's got her head on straight. I'm very sad and disappointed by that. It also seems like not a lot of Asian housewives get the chance to stay around and represent. The ones coming to mind off the top of my head are Jules from New York, of course, Dr. Tiffany Moon, which, I mean, that wasn't her. It was like the whole franchise got canceled. But yeah, it's like you would think there would be more, there would be more Asian American or Asian representation on this network. Like, honestly, the fact that they keep saying they're trying to make these things more diverse, but then either not inviting back the diversity or not really seemingly making an effort to be diverse outside of Black and white. Yeah, but I guess that's just a whole other conversation altogether. Anyway, getting back to Potomac, where was I? I don't even remember. Oh, yeah. Andy was like giving them an opportunity to save themselves, and none of them did. I think I may have already said this. Andy definitely said it, but GNA, Giselle and Ashley, their brand is giving She by Sheree. It doesn't just rhyme, it's giving the same thing. Not to say that it won't become something. And they are apparently in research and development phase of creating a whole new design pattern and construction of an athletic legging. They're talking about the thicker gusset to protect the, you know, sweat and camel toe and all of those unappealing things associated with leggings and working out in them. But to me, the clothes that were shown on the runway were confusing. And when you go to their website, they're just selling branded t-shirts and hats, which is exactly what happened when She by Sheree was launched. Like, the fashions that you see on the runway aren't actually being sold. So, like, what even is that is very confusing to me. Forgetting the fashions, I thought Giselle's comparison of working with Robin versus working with Ashley was interesting. Both Ashley and Robin are Virgo risings. Giselle has a Virgo sun, so it makes sense that they would feel connected on this level. Robin has a North Node and Saturn also in Virgo, and her Saturn is conjunct her ascendant. So Robin's going to come off as a more controlling person. And when I say controlling, I mean of herself. When we have planets that are conjunct our ascendant, we take on the attributes of that planet. So Robin is really good at putting up a wall between herself and others, as we've seen. But she's also, as I said, going to be more just in control of herself, of things as they relate to her. Most importantly, Robin has a Chiron in Taurus. She has a wound around everything being taken away from her. And we know this has happened before with, it was either her manager or her financial planner, who like her and Juan were friends with, who ended up taking all their money and then committing suicide, which was extremely traumatic for her. And her moon is also in Taurus conjunct her midheaven. So her business decisions will be impacted by her emotional landscape. Ashley, on the other hand, has a lot of mutable energy. It's a little more flippant. She's got a Gemini stellium with her sun, Mercury, Venus, and Chiron in Gemini. And these are opposing her Saturn, which is conjunct Uranus in Sagittarius. So her decisions can be spontaneous, a little risky. Ashley's sun is in her 10th house, squaring her Mars in Pisces. So there could be some rose-colored glasses about business decisions she's making, a little bit more footloose and fancy-free than Robin, who's going to be thinking through every decision she makes in every aspect of her life. With Ashley's Gemini placements in her 10th house, I kind of see her being better suited to handle the social aspects of the business versus the financial aspects of the business. And Ashley, as we've spoken about before in relation to herself and Michael, she has her moon in Aries in the 8th house. So this is like further emphasizing impulsive decisions where joint ventures and finances of someone else are involved. So you can definitely see, as Giselle was talking about, their difference in how they handle financial decisions and the purse strings. We can see through their charts how this is playing out in reality. Something else about Ashley that stuck out to me at the end of this reunion, when they were talking about the GNA fashion show, the fight that took place there. And I don't know if I've talked about this comparison before, but Ashley and Whitney from SLC actually are very similar to me, how they show up in these shows. They're very messy. but they both somehow seem to like really easily be able to wipe their hands of the mess and not catch too much blame for the drama they cause. Yes, they are called out for it, but they aren't really dragged into it. And then it's the like the fallout and the players involved in the fallout that seem to have the most heat on them. When we look at their charts, they both have Chiron in Gemini opposing Uranus in Sagittarius. We've talked about how Gemini can be at the low vibe, this vindictive, gossipy energy. So stirring the pot, knowing that you're going to stir up some shit. So like this stirring the pot, this spreading gossip, rumors on the low vibe for drama versus in a higher vibe, gossip just to make connections, right? Like gossip isn't always a negative thing, although it can spiral into it. But it's about the intention that you have behind it at the beginning that really is whether it's a high vibe or a low vibe expression of that placement for you. With Chiron in Gemini, it's a wound being involved. So, you know, that phrase, hurt people, this Chiron in Gemini that they both have, it's like exacerbating this pain and wanting to kind of, whether it's intentional or not, hurt others through bringing things up that maybe are none of your fucking business. And even worse, when it comes to this issue between Wendy and NECA, shit that you don't even understand or that you don't even know what you're talking about. So these Chirons that they have are opposing their Uranus and Sagittarius. We know Uranus, disruptor, shock, awe, Sagittarius, about kind of your perspective, your truth, also like getting to the bottom of what is the truth. Whitney and Ashley also both have Pisces placements that can help keep them veiled from the fallout that ensues. So Whitney's got her Jupiter in Pisces, Ashley has her North Node and her Mars in Pisces. So those are just some things that stuck out to me. And like I said, I've seen some similarities. Yeah, they're both young and a little naive, but it goes a bit deeper. And I think they try to play their young naivete off when they have a better understanding in actuality of what it is that they're doing. Someone else on this cast who has a lot of Gemini energy, but has not only been staying out of the pot stirring, but really out of everything altogether, is Wendy. I feel like she hasn't really been playing along with the rest of the cast. She's just been very on her own. We see her filming about her happy Eddie and Eddie's ventures with the weed business. We see her going on her journey to start her talk show. And what I love is that Wendy like calls herself and identifies as a multi-hyphenate. She's a manifesting generator that is the literal multi-hyphenate energy. She's got her North Node Sun in Chiron in Gemini. She has her Mercury and Venus in Taurus. So she's driven by security, desire for wealth. And those placements are opposing her Mars and Saturn in Scorpio. So it's kind of intensifying these desires and these visions that she has of wealth and security and luxury and comfort. And so the great thing about manifesting generators is you have kind of all these different interests, all these plates in the air that are spinning. And sometimes you leave a plate off to the side and you come back and it starts spinning again. But all these things, while they seem separate to other people, she's got these candle lines and the home scents, and she's a professor and she's a political commentator and she's a housewife. And the thing is that it seems random to other people, but that multi-hyphenate, that manifesting generator, is going to eventually most likely pull them together into a cohesive stream. Now, not always, but often this is the case. And it takes time for all of these things that you've put your energy into and kind of throughout your life have touched on in one way or another for that to fall into place in like the jigsaw puzzle of the grand scheme of things. I think her talk show is really a great example of this, using her existing experience as a political commentator, as a professor, and also her notoriety as a housewife and on this platform to talk about topics that interest her. So I haven't watched her talk show, but I'm kind of interested to see the trajectory that that takes and where that takes her. Okay, so I mean, this is the end of Potomac for this season. Let's talk about my most and least valuable players. This one was a little bit hard because I don't really think anyone was the MVP of the season. The closest I could think was Kiarna. She brought a really good energy to the mix. She's intriguing me, and I do hope we see more of her next season, either as a friend of or maybe as a housewife herself. The LVP of the season was also difficult because it's hard to pick when they're all lacking so much. But I think the top least valuable players were Candace and Wendy, really just for not being able to get along with the other women, having bad attitudes every time the group got together. It just shifts the energy of the entire dynamic of the cast. I was listening to a podcast totally unrelated to the Housewives. They were talking about how on bachelor trips, or no, what's it called? A bachelor party? Like when you go away for a bachelor party, if you have one dude, I mean, it would be the same for any group of people, but this was what they were talking about. If you have one guy that's not like participating and meeting the energy of the rest of the group and is basically a Debbie Downer, they're going to affect the entire energy of the group as a whole. And it's going to change the dynamic of the bachelor party as a whole. That's exactly what's happening on this cast with Wendy and Candace. So maybe with Candace not coming back next year, Wendy will be able to come out and play a little more. Like, I really do miss the energy of season one Wendy. Even season two Wendy, but the ladies were kind of hating on her season two. And I feel like that season two energy she got when she started changing her body and they were saying, this isn't the Professor Wendy that showed up last season. I feel like that really hardened her to the rest of them. So I don't know. Let's see. Only time will tell. But I'd be curious to hear from you guys. Who do you think are the most and least valuable players of Potomac this season? If you're listening on Spotify, I'm going to put a poll for you guys to answer. And if you're not listening on Spotify and you want to participate, just go over to Spotify and you can answer the poll. You don't have to listen to the podcast over there. But yeah, glad that we've got that season of Potomac behind us. You know, honestly, like as much as they didn't interact with each other, I maybe liked this season better than last season. I just feel like there was some fun. Love Karen and her triple 20s. Loved the energy that Karen showed up with. Why wasn't Karen my most valuable player? I don't know. She just didn't. As much as I love her, there was nothing that exciting. There was nothing that fun, you know? Whereas Kiarna brought a new energy. Kind of related but unrelated, I have been re-binging Shaws of Sunset. I don't know if you guys watched that back in the day or have binged it recently. It now is available on Peacock, so if that's something you're interested in, definitely go indulge. Such a good show. Talking about, you know, it's not really Asian representation on Bravo, but it's Central Asian representation. Central Asia just being another term for the chunk of land that we know as the Middle East. I did not remember. So the reason that I started re-binging, the reason I started this binge was because when Traitors ended and I had no more MJ on my screen, I was like craving MJ and I was craving Reza because in my head, the two of them are so tied to each other. But now I'm on season 7 of the 8 seasons that the Shaws of Sunset aired. And I forgot how shady Mercedes, Reza, and Goldnessa, like the three of them, how toxic and shady their quote unquote friendships were with each other. It's really wild. One day I will do a bonus binge on them. Why did I bring that up? Oh, but all that to say, I would love, I mean, I know most of them aren't friends with each other anymore and don't talk to each other anymore. I know MJ and Reza are back to being friends again, and Reza and Tommy even are cordial. I would be interested in seeing the dynamic of the group now that they're older and a little more settled in their lives. Are they still so manipulative, vindictive, shady, backstabby? Is that just who they are? Is that who, like, the dynamic of the group that was set, and it will never change from there? So I may never have answers, but these are questions that are running through my head as I watch this. Also, to circle back on the Paris Hilton question that I asked in my stories, as I said, I never knew that I would have so many thoughts about Paris Hilton, but when I was editing that episode, I was thinking, how did I not even mention this and this and this? And there are just so many things. I mean, she really is a fascinating woman. So you guys voted to have a Paris bonus part two. That will be coming eventually. I've got so many ideas, guys. Like, there's so many binges I want to do. I really want to do The Real Housewives of Melbourne. That's one of my favorite of the all of the franchises of, I mean, it wasn't Bravo, but Bravo adjacent. Yeah, but there's only one little me, and there's so many things to talk about. So we'll get to them eventually. But for now, I am going to sign off. I feel my brain has already started to power down. There's only so much mental energy I have while Mercury is retrograde. Of course, before you go anywhere, go ahead and subscribe to the podcast. Please rate, review, answer the polls over on Spotify. And for more Bravo astrology content, don't forget to follow along on Instagram at The Cosmic Clubhouse. See you next week.